Do we have Dr. Roth a working man's definition? I suppose would be the way I would put this, as one who has been exposed to the field through a family member who was in this area of study and work. But for those that aren't as familiar, sort of that a basic framework of what we mean when we say music therapy.
Well, to use your phrase, a working man's definition, I suppose the best way, the easiest way to understand it would be the application of music experiences for some health-related non-musical outcome, whether it be physical rehabilitation, cognitive rehabilitation, some emotional or mental health diagnoses. The use of music as a therapeutic tool or a therapeutic medium towards that health outcome would be the global 50,000 foot overview of one small part of music therapy.
I mentioned too that there are applications that have dealt with those who have suffered from Parkinson's or stroke or traumatic brain injury. What is the science now telling us in terms of how music and the arts can be used in that therapeutic mode to work through, or at least help work through, that rehabilitation process?
Mm-hmm. That's actually an area of practice where we likely have the best science, meaning basic science, of music perception and music production and how that translates into clinical care. Meaning we actually understand not just how music influences rehabilitation with those three populations, but which aspects of music influence the rehabilitative process and how they do so. Meaning we know that when people synchronize their movement to some external rhythmic source, like of course that we would all just refer to as music, that they're able to operate in a way that's more kinematically optimal. So their movement is more efficient, allowing them to exercise or perform their rehabilitative exercises more efficiently for longer periods of time, which actually shrinks the amount of time that they require to be in therapy. So it gets a little complex, but I think one simple way to present it would be that when we listen to music, particularly music that has a heavy rhythm component to it, that there are areas of the brain and the central nervous system that respond to that temporal stimulus, to that beat, to the pulse, and send signals out to the musculature that sort of prime them for movement and to move in a way that is precognitive or subconscious, whichever way people like to think of that, that they don't have to actually think about, first I move my left foot and then I move my right foot and have to do so over and over. That movement is actually driven by the auditory stimuli, by the music. And it's done so through certain tracts within the spinal cord. And we have that level of biological understanding about the links between the auditory networks and projection into the motor system to be able to provide very specified and robust treatment strategies for people who have experienced things like a stroke or a traumatic brain injury or a Parkinson's disease.
Professor Ed Roth is from Western Michigan University. He is the director of the music therapy program there and also a director of the Laboratory for Brain Research and Interdisciplinary Neurosciences. Professor Roth, has the development or the time and evolution of this understanding brought us almost to a familiarity then with styles of music or certain composers of music, and I mean that in the broadest terms, of those that work the best or have more success, or does it become trial and error with different things to be able to reach some of these individuals who have had some of these experiences that you describe in terms of what he or she would best be able to begin to respond to?
It's actually more specific than that. It's beyond the so-called Mozart effect, if you remember that discussion from several years ago. So the understanding of music perception, meaning how do we understand the temporal aspects of music? How do we understand and aggregate in our mind, create these gestalts of the pitch components to music? And how they actually impact different areas of functioning, regardless of the genre. So it's not so much that the sort of music from the Romantic period would be what would be most used for diagnoses A and B, and rock and roll from the 60s would be best suited for diagnoses C and D. It's actually much more specific. So how does rhythm and meter and tempo affect motor functioning in the healthy brain and the healthy central nervous system? And then how do those elements of music actually affect motor functioning in different pathological central nervous systems like stroke, traumatic brain injury, and Parkinson's? And so it's not so much the influence of genre or composer or era. It actually is much more refined than that, down to the element of music, particularly when it comes to motor research and motor rehabilitation.
Can we apply any of this science then in different forms, if I understand you, to those that may suffer from extreme depression, or those that have been suicidal, or those that have different manic disorders? Can applications, as you've described, work in working with patients like these?
Yeah, that's actually sort of the next frontier of music neuroscience, is trying to understand at a mechanistic level how the perception of certain music elements, and so let's say, for instance, it's in this case we may be talking about the emotional outcomes of different tempi, how tempo affects different emotional outcomes. It's actually an interesting thing that people have observed over the last 15 years, that when it comes to the emotional response to music, tempo is probably the strongest, has the strongest influence. Sort of the next step is then what's happening harmonically in music that might produce a stable response in certain types of people. because certainly you can have a concert hall full of, with a large audience, and people may have very diverse reactions to each little harmonic phrase or harmonic structure in the music. But what we're actually finding is that with certain discrete populations, the emotional reactions to these tonal or harmonic structures, however you want to look at it, tends to be fairly stable and predictable from a behavioral in a self-report aspect. What we are trying to understand now is how is that actually represented in biology, and primarily what that means is how is it represented neuroanatomically, and then even at a much smaller level in the neurochemical reactions to music perception, and even more importantly at a clinical level, neurochemical changes in response to actual engagement in music making.
Does that extend then to the widening amount that we are learning about those who may be anywhere along, as we have heard it termed, the autism spectrum?
Indeed. Yeah. In fact, so now we can get into another aspect or an element of music, which would be form. Although people who are on the autism spectrum can tend to have a very complex and diverse expression of symptoms. But most people associate ASD with some type of social deficit. And when you think about that non-musical behavior or those non-musical behaviors related to social interaction, and you contemplate how are they represented in music, the element that comes to mind and seems to be most translatable would be form. Right? So there are musical forms that follow this A, B, A, B, A, C, A, D type of format where there is a presentation of a thought, then there's a presentation of another thought, then you go back to the original, then onto a third, back to the original, onto a fourth, that kind of thing. Well, the same type of interaction takes place during non-musical behavior when you think about social interactions. One person talks, the other person listens. The next person talks, the first person listens, and there's this back and forth process where that probably is practice and best housing would be in the structure of jazz musicians who are, quote, trading fours, right? So one person solos for four measures while everybody else comps and listens, the next soloist solos for four measures, and you have this back and forth process. So all of that is a way to allow us to use music in a way that's structured using form for people on the autism spectrum to be able to practice this back and forth communication that takes place as a natural process both in music and in typical verbal discourse.
Professor Ed Roth is from Western Michigan University. They're the director of the music therapy program. And obviously, you are representing this specific discipline. Do we find, Professor Roth, that this is being integrated into other forms of art? Is art itself, visual art, or the different tactile forms of art, or simple dance being integrated to some of these theories and discoveries when it comes to music, to use the arts plural in terms of the rehabilitative processes you've described?
I can't speak with a great deal of specificity about each of the arts therapies, but I can tell you that, of course, many people have heard of art therapy. And if you've ever had a child or know, you know, a friend or a family member who's had a child that's been in a hospital, they may have received art therapy as part of their hospitalization. I have worked with dance therapists in the past, and there are also drama therapists. Right now, what I'm seeing outside of formal music therapy is a movement in the sort of arts and medicine or arts and healthcare, where you may have somebody who has expertise in one of the specific art forms, who has some level of training in terms of how they may interact with patients in a hospitalized setting. But in terms of the actual traditional notion around science, meaning sort of biological science, I think it seems evident to me at this point that the biology of music perception and music production is probably the discipline or the profession that's at the forefront of that research.
It opens a level of understanding for some who may have heard the term but don't have or have not had to date as much of an understanding about how it is being used or the latest advances and discoveries of how music can be used in rehabilitation and treatment and therapy. Professor Ed Roth, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us, opening up these avenues. I hope it's applicable to many who would have perhaps a personal or indirect experience with someone who could be in use of this type of therapy, and maybe will have learned something and can use this in a practical way moving forward. Thank you so much.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Thanks so much for having me.